Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, Daniel Foster of National Review Online, and for Jim Garrity today, who's speaking at the National Press Club, that old excuse.
It's like, the eighth time someone's grandmother died. He's always speaking at the National Press Club. The likeliest of excuses.
Yes, exactly. So we've got good martini, bad martini, and crazy martini as usual. Dan, let's start with the good martini, and this is an issue that a little over a year ago was getting all the oxygen politically, and that's the situation surrounding Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker. It's now being overshadowed, of course, by the presidential race, but Scott Walker is facing a recall. The recall effort successfully got on the ballot, but the good news is that right now Scott Walker looks like a pretty good bet for keeping his job, regardless of who his Democratic opponent would be. Part B on the good news front, the two Democrats who are the primary contenders here for this right to face off with us, Scott Walker, are in the midst of a bloodbath right now. As you pointed out to me earlier, Dan, the groundswell for this recall seems to be petering out a little bit since they actually have to pay volunteers now to get out there. And I guess if you have to pay them, they're not really volunteers.
We had Governor Walker in here a few months ago, and I think everyone was genuinely impressed. I mean, sometimes we get politicians in here and, they're politicians. But I think we all sort of liked Walker, and I asked him, he seemed during our conversation to be confident, not cocky, but confident. He didn't seem to be panicking. If I were a man who had as much hatred directed at me as Walker has over the last year and a half by liberals, I'd probably be a little twitchy. But he kept it together, and I asked him, you seem like you're confident. You think you're going to win? And he said, we're not taking anything for granted, but we're going to make our case. And we feel good about that case. Yeah, I mean, Intrade, which should be taken with a grain of salt, but Intrade has him 10 or 15 points over Obama in terms of likelihood of winning their next election. Polls have him up, although it's tight, but Walker's up a little bit. And as you said, Falk and the other Democrat vying for the chance to run against Walker are in this bloodbath, and it's kind of a whoever wins, Walker has a good line against him because on the one hand, there's this liberal union activist who's vowed to repeal everything Walker's done, but is bought and paid for by Wisconsin unions. And then there's this Milwaukee guy who, while he rails against Walker's law, used it to balance the books in Milwaukee. So, and as you said, now we're talking about paying canvassers $80 a day. Maybe they can round up some of the people who spent all last year, camping out in Madison. I'm sure a lot of those folks are looking for work. So I think good things in Wisconsin, and I've said it before and I'll say it again, I think Wisconsin is the second most important election in 2012.
Yeah, this is a huge bellwether of whether people are serious about wanting to reduce the size of government and get spending under control. Walker took that mandate very seriously, and fortunately it looks like in a state that actually normally tilts kind of blue, he seems to be in good shape. We'll see what happens in the Democratic runoff, and then obviously the unions will be going full barrel against Scott Walker, but hopefully he'll survive, and right now that looks like a good bet. On to martini number two now, Dan, and tomorrow is May Day. For people like you and me, that doesn't mean a whole lot, except that it's the first of the month, but for communists around the world and people who hate free markets and other things like that, it's a major protest day, and of course, that means the occupiers will be out in force. They not only want to demonstrate, but they want to actually shut down commerce. They want to shut down the banking systems in various cities. They want to shut down the transportation systems. So basically, their idea of getting more people to rally to their cause is to completely ruin their day.
We'll see what happens. We have the indomitable Charlie Cook on the scene tomorrow. He cut his teeth here at National Review covering the Occupy movement, and it's a very brief, thankfully, heyday. Last year, he's going to go downtown and take a look and see what these folks are up to. But I don't think we're going to see anything like the general strikes that have from time to time swept the socialist countries of Europe. I think we'll see some localized disruptions and maybe grab a headline or two. But look, the Occupy movement petered out because it couldn't figure out what it was. And the people who were most enthusiastic about it were also the craziest and the smelliest. It started out day one. It might have been, people were comparing it to the Tea Party, and that might have been true. It certainly captured a sentiment that had gone unspoken for in the country. But unlike the Tea Party, which went about constructively organizing and constructively engaging in the political process, and changing the way that the political process works. The occupiers are sort of all over the place, and they're just interested in braiding their hair and shouting. And so I don't expect to see much from them tomorrow. But, you know, let's hope I'm right.
Yeah, let's hope your subway trip tomorrow is uneventful. to martini number three now. And Dan, the White House Correspondents' Dinner was on Saturday night. It's not exactly my cup of tea. I'm a little more sweatshirt and jeans type, but this is the type that used to be White House correspondents and the president. Now somehow you get Kardashians and celebrity animals and all sorts of other people there. I don't know how this works out. But anyway, pretty fun night for the most part. There's some humor. The president does a routine. They always hire a comedian to do a routine. Some of the jabs are funny. Some of them cut pretty close. And Jimmy Kimmel took shots at just about everybody. And since, well, we like conservatives, here are some of the shots he took at President Obama.
Mr. President, you remember... Remember when the country rallied around you in hopes of a better tomorrow? That was hilarious. But honestly, it's a thrill for me to be here with the president, a man who has, I think, done his best to guide us through some very difficult times and paid a heavy price for it. You know, there's a term for guys like President Obama. Probably not two terms, but even some of your fellow Democrats think you're a pushover, Mr. President. They would like to see you stick to your guns. And if you don't have any guns, they would like to see you ask Eric Holder to get some for you. It's kind of hard to be funny with the President of the United States sitting right next to you, looking at you. And yet somehow, day in and day out, Joe Biden manages to do it.
So there you go, Dan. Even taking up some of the issues that most of the people in that room have decided to ignore, like Fast and Furious. So good for Jimmy Kimmel for doing a little bit of homework there. He took plenty of shots at Mitt Romney, too, and John Boehner and everybody else. But for the amount of money spent there, I guess for the most part, everybody had a good time.
Yeah, you know, I'm kind of with you. I think some of the jabs are funny. I certainly like it when Washington can kind of recognize its own absurdity. But there's a lot of things that annoy me about the Correspondents' Dinner. Everyone in the chattering class in D.C. calls it, you know, especially all the youngsters like me, they call it nerd prom for all the young political reporters who watch it with popcorn and the lucky few who get to be there. I don't like that aspect of it. I certainly don't like the self, you know, congratulatory aspect of it and the insideriness of it. You know, I certainly think it's a better way for the elected class to spend its time than passing bad laws. So if they wanted to do it every night, that'd be just fine with me. And I think Kimmel did a solid job. But I'll tell you something. Mark Stein had a good post on the corner where he was referencing someone. Forgive me, I can't remember who, but a Washington correspondent who noted that the best example of the D.C. wider world disconnect was that she bumped into somebody after the dinner who was a Beltway guy and maybe a lobbyist, who had been a Beltway guy and was now living in New York City but was down for the Correspondents' Dinner. And this guy said to her, "Why did the president keep talking about eating dogs? What was the deal with that?" You know, it just shows that the sort of people likely to be invited by the White House aren't going to understand the narrative that has gripped the rest of the country.
So apparently the bubble extends a little bit beyond the White House and the Beltway for people who just get stuck on their own narrative and don't even know the funny little side stuff that won't even decide the election. But certainly makes for interesting fodder there. Dan, yeah, as always, have a great day. Thanks so much for pinch hitting.
Thanks a lot, Greg.
Daniel Foster, news editor at National Review Online. I'm Greg Corumbus for Radio America. Please join Jim Garrity and I back here on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.